first reading is from Deuteronomy chapter 5, verses 12 to 15, and it's on page 282 of the Red Bible, if there are any Bibles out. Observe the Sabbath day by keeping it holy, as the Lord your God has commanded you. 6 days you shall labour and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you, nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your ox, your donkey, or any of your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns, so that your male and female servants may rest as you do. Remember that you were slaves in Egypt, and that the Lord your God brought you out of there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God has commanded you to observe the Sabbath day. Now, the second reading is from the first book of Kings, chapter 9, and it's verses 10 to 9, and it's on page 535 of the Red Bible. Sorry. At the end of 20 years, during which Solomon built these two buildings, the temple of the Lord and the royal palace, King Solomon gave 20 towns in Galilee to Hiram, king of Tyre, because Hiram had supplied him with all the cedar and juniper and gold he wanted. But when Hiram went from Tyre to see the towns that Solomon had given him, he was not pleased with them. "What kind of towns are these you have given me, my brother?" he asked. And he called them the land of Kabul, a name they have to this day. Now Hiram had sent to the king 120 talents of gold. Here is the account of the forced labor King Solomon conscripted to build the Lord's temple, his own palace, the terraces, the wall of Jerusalem, and Hazor, Megiddo, and Giza. Pharaoh, king of Egypt, had attacked and captured Giza. He had set it on fire. He killed its Canaanite inhabitants and then gave it as a wedding gift to his daughter, Solomon's wife, and Solomon rebuilt Giza. He built up Lower Beth Horon, Baalath, and Tadmor in the desert within his land, as well as all his store cities and the towns for his chariots and for his horses, whatever he desired to build in Jerusalem, in Lebanon, and throughout all the territory he ruled. Here endeth the word. Thanks be to God.
Well, you might have heard of the Bible being one story. So let me tell you the story right now. It's the story of work. So in the next 25 minutes, we're going to breeze through the whole Bible, and we're going to take a few stops along the way to look at work for us today as well. It's a very ancient story, and it is our story that we continue living in today. Well, in the beginning, earth is formless. It hasn't taken shape, but the Spirit of God is hovering over the waters, and from there, the Spirit goes to work and begins to shape things. And as the Maker begins to shape things, the Maker makes humanity to join in with his work. God makes humanity in his image. And so where other ancient societies had said that the image of God is the God King, the Pharaoh, our story says that the image of God is all of us together, male and female, all of us to represent God and do God's work on God's behalf. And the work is a work of fruitfulness, of bringing life and flourishing and wholeness. It is a work of earthkeeping. And that's what our work today is for as well. Work is designed for good because God is a worker. Earth was created as a workplace long before anything went wrong. So as you look ahead to your week, I wonder, where will you be pursuing fruitfulness? Fruitfulness is something for all of us, no matter our age or ability or employment status. Do we stop being fruitful when we retire? No, our work is to keep being fruitful. Caring for grandchildren, caring for others, that's part of work. There's so much good and fruitful work beyond what you can be paid for. Your artistic work, your gardening work. But what do Adam and Eve do? They question the Maker's goodness and they begin to decide good and evil for themselves. And so frustration and futility becomes part of work. Women struggle in labour. Men dominate women. The ground doesn't want to cooperate and produces thorns and thistles. If that's your experience of work today, that it's hard and frustrating and even futile, our story acknowledges the pain of that. Our story says it's not meant to be that way. We want a bigger vision for work. Maybe the Maker has a bigger vision for work, but sometimes work is a heavy, heavy load. How do you carry that? How much of that can you take? So as you look ahead to your week, I wonder where those thorns and thistles are for you. But that's not all there is to work, even in a fallen world, is there? Even at this moment of terrible division with Adam and Eve, the Maker keeps on working. And the Maker makes something for them. The Maker makes clothes for Adam and Eve. Because the Maker doesn't just make new things. The Maker works with what's there. And this is how we're called to work today as well. When we come to work, we find half-made things, structures that have maybe outlived their purpose, subpar materials, relationships that need renewing. We are called, like the Maker, to make use of what's there. And not just to make do with it, but to make good with it. So we're not just starting new things or introducing missing things, but actually working with what's there. So all is not lost. There's a frustration to work, and yet there's still the possibility of newness, of a different direction, that things could be different. So as you look ahead to your week, I wonder what might be possible even now. But the direction that Adam and Eve take, look where it leads. To Babylon, the Tower of Babel. People start to organize against the Maker. They create new technology, bricks, and they use it to make a name for themselves. They build a ziggurat to show that they can make the gods work for them, maybe. You know, part of how the Maker made things is that all people are in his image. All people are workers. And so all people can generate and build and develop things. The Maker's goodness and generosity means that it's not only the ones following him who experience that. So humans can build amazing things, whatever their relationship to the Maker. But the question is, whose name are you doing it in? So as you look ahead to your week, I wonder, what name is being served in your work? What does that organization really stand for? What is it known for? What direction does it want to take the world in? But what we see in our story is that the fruitfulness of the Maker will not easily be thwarted. So when people gather to build that tower, the Maker scatters them. His mission of fruitfulness is going to keep on going. So the Maker has a mission, and the mission needs a community. And the Maker reaches out to Abraham and calls Abraham out of the city, and Abraham sets off on this long wilderness journey. The Maker promises to Abraham, I'm going to bless you so that you can bless others, and all nations will be blessed through you. And here again, we have the purpose for work. This is not just for us. This is for the common good. This is for passing on the Maker's goodness. It's blessed to be a blessing. This is what fruitfulness looks like. And this begins to be fulfilled in one of Abraham's descendants, Joseph. He's the golden child, but he's from a broken home. And he's not innocent either. He ends up being trafficked and taken on his own wilderness journey. And once he lands in Egypt, he continues to face terrible adversity. But he works in such a way that he is recognized, and more responsibility is given to him. And then he's faced with the greatest challenge yet, a climate crisis. But he responds, and he keeps working for the common good, and he stores up food so that when the famine hits, there's still enough. He's been blessed to be a blessing. And even though he's working for a foreign power, he's actually working in line with the Maker's purposes of fruitfulness. And so the people of Abraham have begun to bless the nations. Did you know that Joseph is an administrator? He's a civil servant. He's dealing with spreadsheets and accounting programs. If you're an administrator, I wonder what the Maker has in mind for your work. When those processes are working well, who is served by them? Blessed even. The Maker loves a good administrator. So as you look ahead to your week, I wonder where those admin tasks are that cannot be neglected. But you know, the fruitfulness that we've been talking about, sometimes that is threatening to others. And the people of Joseph in Egypt continue to be fruitful in the coming generations. And the powers resent them for it. The people of Joseph are enslaved and exploited and forced to build towers for the God King. The Maker doesn't leave them there, but rescues them from slavery, and that experience of slavery becomes so important. As the Maker continues to teach his people, Moses keeps on saying, remember when you were slaves in Egypt. You cannot work in that way. You cannot go back to that way of working. Because they haven't just lived in Egypt, slavery is actually something that they have learned and internalized. And we heard that in our first reading. It says, remember that you were slaves in Egypt, and that the Lord your God brought you out of there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God has commanded you to observe the Sabbath day. Don't work every day. Not even your animals should be working every day. You have to slow down, because anything else is the way of slavery. Sabbath is about stopping, recognizing that The story we're living in is the Maker's story. So part of what that does to us is it relativizes work for us. It means that work is just one thing. It's just part of life. It's not everything. We can't make work everything. So don't be dominated by work. Work is meant to lead somewhere and to not just take over and squeeze other things out. We all know that tendency for work to take over. But Sabbath is the antidote to that. So as you look ahead to your week, I wonder, where are those moments of stopping? What are those activities that re-energize you and that actually leave you refreshed? We do recognize at the same time that this is increasingly difficult today, when it's not that we want to work more, but for some of us, we have to in order to make ends meet. So if you are feeling like your life is just squeezed, I encourage you, turn to your community here at Barney's. Seek out that support that you need, because they're here for you. Well, generations later, another figure like Joseph comes along. Solomon, the greatest of Israel's king. He's filled with wisdom. He's blessing other nations with his wisdom. And it seems like maybe the Maker's people are beginning to do what they're meant to be doing. And yet, Solomon himself gets involved with slavery. And we saw this in our second reading, that Solomon builds God's temple, but he also builds a palace for himself, and the palace is even larger and more expensive than the temple. And he builds using this conscripted labor force. He builds store cities. He builds chariots. So at the very point at which it seems like maybe the Maker's people could really begin extending blessing to other nations, they're actually getting stuck in that slavery mindset again, building towers. You know, today when we have a great project or business starts to take off, there is that temptation there to squeeze more out of it, to capitalize more, to become more efficient, so that we might be extracting more profit and drawing in more business. But meanwhile, the way that we're treating people in the process is actually harsher and more exploitative. But we hear the words of Moses, don't go back, don't recreate hardship for others. So as you look at your week, I wonder, where might Solomon be trying to get ahead? The Maker had warned his people, if you go back to that way of thinking, he would put a stop to it. I won't put up with it, he said. I won't. And so what happens? In the generations following Solomon, other nations come and break up the kingdom and take the people into exile. And Israel becomes a geopolitical small fry. Idolatrous nations seem to have the upper hand, and even the Maker's rule of the nations seems to be up in the air. But does that mean an end to the work of blessing and fruitfulness? No. Jeremiah the prophet passes on the message to the people in exile. They've been taken off to Babylon, but Jeremiah says, flourish, put down your roots, grow food, become part of the cities that you find yourselves in. Make a life for yourselves there. Work for the good of the city. Pray for it. Daniel and his friends are Israelite royals forced to learn the ways of the Babylonians. They're given new names, and for 3 years they are trained to think and speak like Babylonians. But something interesting happens. instead of rejecting this, they embrace it while finding clever ways to keep their distinctiveness. So they don't do this grudgingly, they immerse themselves in it and they are recognized as 10 times better, it says. They don't forget the Maker and they find ways to show the Maker's goodness. You know, sometimes in Australia today, we as Christians may feel marginalized. We may feel like there's less room for our beliefs and values in the wider community. How do we respond? Well, says Jeremiah, put down roots. Become part of that wider community. Work for the good of the city. Like Daniel, we don't want to stand outside of culture and offer cultural commentary and tell one another what's wrong with it. We want to live inside it and understand all its ways so that we can actually show the distinctiveness of the Maker and the blessing that he wants for people. So as you look ahead to your week, I wonder how you might take a step closer to others, become more a part of the community around you. And in Daniel's time, the prophets continue to speak of a future beyond exile. There will come a time when the captives will be set free. Oppression will be lifted. The year of the Lord's favor will come. And we hear those words again on the lips of Jesus in Luke's gospel. He says, "The Spirit of the Lord is on me because he's anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, to set the oppressed free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." And so Jesus takes up those words himself, and it becomes clear he's not just repeating the message, he's actually embodying it and bringing it about. He's coming as deliverer. In John's gospel, Jesus talks about his work and the Maker's work. He says, "My Father is always at work to this very day, and I too am working." And people ask Jesus, "What must we do so that we are doing God's works?" And Jesus replies, "The work of God is this, to believe in the one that he has sent." See, Jesus is doing the Maker's ancient work of working with what's there, picking up the pieces, putting things back on their course. So if you want that fruitfulness, that wholeness, a return to earth keeping and things set right, it all comes together in Jesus. When he dies for the sins of the people, he shows in a decisive and definitive way that the long, long journey with slavery is coming to an end. You set out to determine good and evil for yourself, and the Maker's not holding that against you if you're with Jesus. And in his resurrection to life, he makes new life a present reality. He renews the people of the Maker so that they can get back to plan A, blessing to the nations, being a light to the world. Now, there are some followers of Jesus who start to think, "Oh, everything's on track now. We can kick back and just wait until Jesus comes back. We don't have to work anymore. We don't have to do much of anything anymore." But Paul comes making tents, and he says, "We're not depending on your hospitality. We're supporting ourselves, and each of you should be working in the Maker's world to support yourself so that you can support others. Do your work, do good work, so that you win the respect of outsiders. Make tents like Paul, like Priscilla and Aquila, and make good tents." And that's why Jesus sends his Spirit, so that the people can actually start living in the Maker's ways. And so that when Jesus does return, he'll be able to find a people who are doing what the Maker intended. People whose work is truly life-giving. Work that makes room for the widow and the orphan. Work that subverts the tower building and the God kings. That's why a crucified Messiah becomes so attractive in the Roman Empire. And that's the beauty of Jesus still today. So the message is not one of simply waiting till a final new creation at the end of history, but new creation emerging here and now, where the resurrection life is already being lived out. So what kind of people will the Maker find? People who are deceived about God's goodness, like Adam and Eve. People who are trying to make a name for themselves, like at Babel. People like Solomon, who've been working for a good cause but have actually lost the plot and started exploiting. People like some of those Paul met, living for eternity but keeping themselves at arm's length from the world. Or will the Maker find people like Stephen? After Jesus sends his Spirit to empower his people for this resurrection life, the community starts to grow and people from other nations start to join, but the 12 disciples are still just staying in the city, which is strange because Jesus had said that they would not just be witnesses in Jerusalem, but in Judea and Samaria and to the ends of the earth. Well, as the community grows, the 12 get some other people to start organizing food for the widows. And one of these hospitality workers, Stephen, is filled with the Spirit. He winds up confronting the temple system just as Jesus had done, and he tells the true history of the people, and he is killed just as Jesus had been. And with his death, Stephen becomes the catalyst for the Maker to scatter his people once again so that the Maker's mission can continue from Jerusalem, to Judea and Samaria and to the ends of the earth through someone from Hospo. Now, sometimes we think some kinds of work are more important than others. Caring work or education or Christian ministry, but we can see the Maker using the unexpected. And sometimes the Maker's purposes and mission are seen more clearly in those other places. Have you ever wondered to yourself, how could the Maker use me in my work? The Maker used Stephen from Hospo. As you look ahead to your week, I wonder, where might the Maker be wanting to use you? And it takes us to the final part of the story, the final book of the Bible, not the final part of the story, the book of Revelation, and it ends with this beautiful picture of the city of God coming down to the people of God. And in this picture, we see how things we see where things are going. A picture where work is not done away with, but creation is able to continue the work it was made to do. So creator and creation are in sync with one another, collaborating together. The old order has been done away with. Earth is the workplace it was always meant to be. Babylon has been transformed. It is shining God's light to the nations. The gates are open. The rulers of earth are bringing the glory of the nations into the city. There's no need to close the gates against hostile forces. There can be coming and going. Trade and business can keep on going. It says there's no longer any curse. There is healing for nations. And the servants of the Lamb will be the earth keepers they were always meant to be. That original picture of fruitfulness can continue. We're not headed to heaven, we're headed to a city. That city is not fully here yet, but the picture is of a heavenly city coming to earth. So our work now is a place where we can look for those glimpses of the new creation, showing who the Maker is, bringing the Maker's life. So the story doesn't end there in the book of Revelation. The Maker continues walking with us as we keep living in his story. And so we wonder, what is still to come on the way to that final city? What does the Maker have in mind for our work? Amen.
Thanks, Arthur. I love that encouragement of, I'm sure for all